Today we celebrate the solemnity of the Epiphany, and especially this year, what's just very noticeable to me is how the gospel today, this story, that's all familiar to us, perhaps mostly because of the Christmas song, We Three Kings, but this story really fulfills an important Old Testament prophecy that I think helps us to understand ourselves and the church, who God is calling us to be in the world. So if we look at this first reading from the Old Testament book of Isaiah, this is what we heard and read. Rise up in splendor, Jerusalem. The glory of the Lord shines upon you. Darkness covers the earth and thick clouds cover the peoples. But upon you the Lord shines, and over you appears his glory. So already we begin to see the connection between the gospel and this prophecy. Upon you the Lord shines, over you appears his glory. So what do we have in the Epiphany scene? But we have the star right above Jesus and Mary. So then if we read on, we heard this. Nations shall walk by your light, and kings by your shining radiance. This is actually why the song We Three Kings is called We Three Kings. It doesn't come from the gospel. It doesn't mention that they're kings in the gospel. But in the prophecy, it talks about kings coming to Jerusalem, which is why the song calls them kings. Nations shall walk by your light. So whenever the Old Testament is talking about the nations, it's always referring to the foreign nations, which are the pagan nations. So the nations other than Israel, peoples other than Israel, who worship foreign false gods, often a lot of them. So they'll have a god of the sky and a god of the sea and a fertility god. And what differentiated the Israelites among all of these foreign peoples is that they rejected the worship of any created thing and worshiped only the one true God. So what's amazing about this prophecy that we are hearing from Isaiah is that God's going to shine a light among his people, and that it's going to attract who? The nations. So in the gospel today, where are the Magi from? Well, they're from the East. That means they're not Jews. They're not from Israel. They're foreigners who would have worshipped their own foreign pagan gods. And so we're seeing already how this prophecy is being fulfilled in their visit, that a light is shining above Israel, and these nations, or representatives of the nations, are coming towards the light. So it gets even better than this. What did we hear as we continue on? Then you shall be radiant at what you see. Your heart shall throb and overflow. The riches of the sea shall be emptied out before you. The wealth of nations shall be brought to you. They shall come bearing gold and frankincense. So again, an obvious fulfillment of the prophecy that these nations, as they come towards the light that's reflecting off of Israel, that they're going to bring the treasures of their culture and the treasures from their lands. And then finally, and most importantly, they are proclaiming the praises of the Lord. So not only do these foreign pagan countries come and they offer gifts, but they also worship the one true God of Israel, which is exactly what we see in the passage for today. What do the Magi do? They open their treasures and offer gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and they prostrate themselves before Jesus and Mary, which is a physical sign of worship. So a lot happening here in this very important passage, showing us how now these Old Testament prophecies, and it would have been very interesting to have been a faithful Jew, a faithful Israelite, you know, during these hundreds of years before Christ, wondering when and how these prophecies were going to be fulfilled. Well, one of the things that the gospel writers do is show that Jesus is the fulfillment of these Old Testament prophecies. So something really important about this that I think helps us to understand better our own vocation and the vocation of the church. One of the things that we see in this prophecy is that Israel didn't exist for itself, but existed so that through Israel, God could save the world. This is really important because it might puzzle us, well, why did God choose this one people? And why Israel? Israel's a small, podunk nation. Why did God choose them? Well, it wasn't about them. God chose a particular people, not so that he could just save that particular people, but he chose a people through whom he wanted everybody to be saved. And so this mission that Israel had in the world, then we see in this gospel how that begins, in Jesus, that begins to be fulfilled. That God gives Israel this gift of his own self-revelation, culminating in the appearance of the Son of God made flesh, but how God wants all of, not just Israel to whom the promises were made, but all peoples to come and worship the one true God through Israel. So this helps us a lot, because who is the new Israel? Who's the fulfillment of Israel? Well, it's the church that Jesus started. And he didn't start from scratch. He took the old Israel and he infuses his own new life into it and sets that forward. And that's the church that was started by the 12 apostles, who were the first bishops of the church, who would go on to ordain the next bishops of the church and the next bishops of the church, and passing down through apostolic succession the teachings all the way down to today, when here we are gathered in Glencoe, Minnesota, about to celebrate the same Eucharist that was celebrated by Peter and Paul and Andrew and Matthew. It's the same church. There were 12 founders of Israel, the great patriarchs, the sons of Jacob. And why does Jesus choose 12 apostles? Well, it's to show that the church is the new Israel, the fulfillment of Israel. And so just thinking about what we learned today about Israel's mission and vocation helps us to understand better the church's mission and vocation. That God gives us in the Catholic Church all of these gifts, a treasury of gifts, not just so you and me can be saved, but so that the world can be saved through us, through the church. So I think this morning, these readings, this reflection gives us something to think about and to pray about, questioning, do we live this vocation as a church? Is this what we're doing? Are other people seeing the light reflected off of us? Because we have Jesus. Just like the Magi come, and who do they find? Jesus sitting in the arms of Mary. The church has always seen Mary to be a symbol of the church. So where's Jesus found today? Well, still in the arms of Mary, but now in the arms of the church. So do we take this mission of needing to attract and draw others to the church so that people can find Christ? So just want to think about this a little bit more. I might get into a little trouble here. But if we think about what's happened in the Catholic Church in the past 50 years, we can ask the question, has the Catholic Church in the United States declined or increased in the past 50 years? Well, the answer is obvious, right? It's definitely, definitely declined. So why is this? Well, it's part of the mystery of God's providence. It's nobody's fault, necessarily. One thing that we could say is because of an increasingly aggressive secular culture that's hostile to the faith, that's taking our young people more than ever today. But we have to ask what our response is. So traditionally in the church, we would talk about the transcendentals. The transcendentals are the things that attract others. And so the church has named three of them traditionally: truth, beauty, and goodness. Three things that are of God that are universally appealing. I mean, you don't have to be a Christian to appreciate any of these things. And in fact, there's something written into our human nature that's drawn to these three things, which is why they're called the transcendentals, because they transcend culture, race, ethnicity, whatever. Truth, beauty, goodness. So we can think about truth, beauty, and goodness as the light that needs to emanate from the church in order to have universal appeal and draw people in. So we can just ask the question, like, where have truth, beauty, and goodness been in our church in the past 50 years, let's say? So we can talk about beauty, that the church needs to attract others to Christ through beauty. Now, we're very blessed here at St. Pius, I think, to have one of the most beautiful churches in the diocese. Thank God. But we've also built a lot of ugly churches in the Catholic Church. And our liturgy has become less and less beautiful. Beauty in the liturgy has been greatly, greatly neglected. So that's what's happened in the past 50 years. We can think about the truth. Now, the church has a 2,000-year-old intellectual tradition. So many brilliant women and men praying, meditating, writing, explaining the church's teaching. A great example of this is the Catholic Catechism, written in the 90s under Pope John Paul II. Really a magnificent exposition of the church's teaching. But what have we done in the past 50 years? Well, at least when I went to CCD, watered down teaching of the church. So that the most important thing is that I'm okay and you're okay and we all feel good about ourselves, but there's no teaching of the church. We've lost so many teachings of the church. We don't know them. And then finally, just thinking about how goodness attracts. I think we see this best in the saints who are good, just so good to others, who give themselves in service. And so how has our Catholic Church responded to the call to be goodness in the world and attracting to others? Well, just want to ask the question, and our parish here is not unique to this, about how much time and energy we spend doing things like fundraising and versus how much time and energy we spend in direct service to those who are in need. I think most parishes would say that they don't do a lot of the latter, but they do a lot of the former. But what attracts people? So I guess I just offer this all for our reflection, examination of conscience, mine too, because as a pastor and as a shepherd, it's really my responsibility to seek these things, beauty, truth, goodness, and to bring them about in my own life, but also in the life of the parish. So one last image, just as we close, this is our not only the vocation of the church, but because the church is composed of you and me, this is our vocation too. The reason that we're on this earth is so that we can attract others to Christ, so that a light will be shining from us and attract others. So one artistic representation of this is often depicted in depictions of the saints who, what do they have above their heads? A halo. What's a halo? Well, it's a ring of light. And what's that symbolizing? That the saints give off this light that comes from Christ living within them, and people experience through them truth, goodness, beauty, and it attracts them. Authentic holiness attracts other people. We see this in John Paul II. We see this in Mother Teresa. People wanted to be around them all the time. So holiness is not something that makes us less attractive to people. And if that's our experience, then we haven't seen authentic holiness. Authentic holiness attracts others. So in my life and in yours, let's ask the Lord how we can be more faithful witnesses of the gospel, how in our parish and in our personal lives we can live more the universally appealing transcendentals of goodness, truth, and beauty. And let's really ask the Lord today to pour out an abundance of blessing on his church so that we can be what we're meant to be and called to be, a light in the darkness of the world, attracting people to the treasure that we have, which is not us, but which is Christ among us in the church.